freaking auto!
This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Mark, Matt, Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Heward, not exactly Joe Camp there in the pocket.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Let's go, Brock and Salt, Seattle Sports here on 710, seattlesports.com, Seattle Sports app, and the podcast platforms, all of them, wherever you may find them. Yeah, so the last 5.5 months plus are kind of about to come down to tonight and tomorrow. I don't know, man. I am disappointed. I am bummed out. I am upset. I'm a little surprised. I know many of you are not, and you can feel free to let me know about it. This is what you always thought would happen. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't think we would be at this point. But the Mariners have gotten themselves into a must-win situation starting tonight. It's no longer you know that sort of stage before must-win we've talked about, right? The sort of theoretical must win. You're now at must win. You've got to win this series. You've got to beat the Astros. And the only way to do that is to win tonight with George Kirby on the hill and to win tomorrow with Bryce Miller. No other options, guys. That's it. That's where we are. There is nothing else left but to win these two games. Why? Because unfortunately, over the course of really the last 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, but let's talk specifically about the last 4 days, you got small. And maybe what's even more upsetting about it is some of your better players, unfortunately, got small.
Yeah.
I'm watching that game last night. What I could stand of it, I will admit it was hard. It was hard. I was like Clockwork Orange, but my peeled eyes open to watch it, especially as there was Monday Night Football on, and I did watch a little bit of the Kraken last night, which was great. That was sort of a nice distraction when I became too enraged to keep watching and had to turn it off for a little while because my eyes were bleeding, like literal blood coming out of my eyeballs because I was so upset about what I was seeing on the field. But you know what was so maddening about it? Unlike in Texas, where their rookies unfortunately just got beat, it was their best players. Yep. I'm watching Julio not only go 0 for the day, but come up with a huge spot in the third inning and a chance to get back in the game and ground into a double play. Why was he in such a bad spot to begin with? Well, it didn't help that Julio got to a ball in center field, kicked it with the glove, and then ended up giving a triple instead of a double. Oh, yeah, that guy ended up scoring on because of that. So, yeah, I got to tell you, I was sad last night. And it wasn't just Julio. JP goes 0-for. Cal goes 0-for. Teo goes 0-for. Gino goes 0-for. Who got hits in this game? Rojas, Canzone. Kelnick keeps taking his walks. I mean, like, God, what a frustration on the offensive side. And yet, you know me. The offense, you can't have your ace show up in the biggest moment of the year in his biggest game and have A-plus stuff. And he did. He had A-plus stuff. 99 in the first inning on the black. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. We were due for some vintage, perfect shove report Castillo. And instead, exactly the opposite. He just kept missing location and fastball down the middle and middle. And guess where those balls go? Far away.
Barreled
when you
up.
Make those kind of mistakes to a team like the Astros.
Everything that they are hitting was hard. There was no soft contact off of it.
None. So look, this is how I try to be as honest with you guys as possible every day. Over the weekend in Texas, I was frustrated not so much at the Mariners as just the game of baseball.
The BABIP.
They should have won game two. Mm-hmm. Okay? They should have won game two. Mm-hmm. And they hit well enough to win games one and three. So I was frustrated by the game of baseball. What we saw yesterday was the opposite of that. Okay? And hopefully that's how you know that when I come in and tell you that's a game they should have won, you know I'm telling you the truth, because I'll come in on a day like today and say that was absolute dog poop. That was unacceptable what you got last night. I don't say that every day. I don't want to waste that. No, most games are acceptable. Most games are acceptable. Okay? Most losses are acceptable. Last night wasn't. The two over the weekend? Three over the weekend? I'm mad about them. I'm still frustrated. But I don't feel like they as a team did something to screw themselves out of those games. Yesterday, your entire group of nucleus core players did a collective zero, and your ace got shelled.
Yeah.
Okay? I think that says it pretty simply. So I don't know why we're at the point we're
number
at.
Number one, Salk, I want to tell you, all your feelings are valid.
Okay, thank you.
You deserve to hear it.
I appreciate that. I'm
number
bummed.
Two, your comment of when the moment got big, they got small is exactly what happened.
It's exactly what happened. And that just stinks.
Oh, it hurts a lot.
We got beat. I mean, there's no way around it. Verlander dealt 7 of 8 innings. We're 1-2-3. Certainly had a shot there early in the game with the bases loaded. And when you get a chance against a pitcher like that early, you have to jump on it or take advantage of it. And we weren't able to do it. So
that's a little bit from Scott last night. By the way, let me be, I've never seen it before. There was not a question for Scott. He spoke for 2 minutes. And I don't know why. None of the reporters there asked him a question afterwards. Maybe they were on deadline. Maybe they had somewhere to be. I don't know what happened. But there were no questions for Scott. So I only have a limited amount of reaction from him today. And I agree with him. What do I hear him saying there? Their players played better than our players. And in the biggest moment of the game for us, which was the third inning opportunity to get to Verlander, our best player grounded into a double play. What do you want me to do? Yell at him? Nothing you can do.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, for the last week, Julio's gotten small in the field, on the base paths, and at the plate in big spots. Jeff Passan said it how long ago, and he's going to join us a little early today at 7:30, and I'm sure he'll be gloating over his glorious Rangers or whatever, but he said it early this year. This team is going to go as Julio goes.
Yep.
Well, unfortunately, here in the last week of the season, Julio's went. And I'm not like telling you I'm not down on Julio. This doesn't mean he's not going to be a good player or a clutch player down the rest of his career. Who the heck knows what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. But Julio Rodriguez, right now, this year, right now in the last week, unfortunately, has gotten small when the going got big.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that stinks.
And against the Astros, a team that you've largely handled this year well.
Not last night.
Last night was the exact opposite.
Not last night. Unfortunately, they came to play. You didn't, and that's the result. So, do I feel like the Mariners are an inferior team? No, not really. I mean, it's funny the way you can look at these things. The Mariners obviously have lost, 8 of 9 to Texas, right? Is that the number, 8 of 9? Okay,
yeah.
So they've lost 8 of 9 to Texas. You know what that means? That in games not against each other, the Mariners have a better record than the Rangers.
That's true.
Of course.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, they're only two games. Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's just pretty basic math.
Gosh.
So in all the games not against each other, the Mariners are a better team than the Rangers. But okay, the Rangers are much better. In all the games against the Astros, the Mariners have won, 7 of 10? But in all the games against other teams, the Astros are better than the Mariners. I don't know what it looks like for the Astros and Rangers against each other. I'd probably have to look it up. But my point being here, like, these three teams are all actually very close. So I'm not panicked today about the future of the Mariners. I'm not walking in looking for major change. I'm not looking to fire anybody. Yes, they're going to have to if they don't win tonight and tomorrow and probably a couple times over the weekend. They are probably going to have to make some changes to this roster. But I don't think the people who are making the decisions are going to go anywhere, nor would I want them to.
Mm-hmm.
They are right there with the other two teams that are going to probably, as of today, end up ahead of them. They've absolutely tanked here in September. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk through it. We're going to have, my guess is, weeks and months to try to figure it out. And on Thursday, obviously, we are going to ask Jerry DePoto why he thinks it's happened. But you know what his answer is going to be? I'll tell you right now. I don't know. Unfortunately, over the last 3 weeks, everything went awry. The pitching got tired. Right, I think you can safely say that there was just the cumulative effect of so many injuries in your starting pitching staff
and a couple of young guys.
I don't know, man. I don't know what to say.
Astros are 9-4 over the Rangers this year.
Okay, so I guess really the Astros are the best team of the three. Maybe who the heck knows? I mean,
on,
so if
on
that's
a given
the case,
month?
Though, that but then they're what 9-3 against them?
9-4.
So in all games not against each other, the Rangers are better than the Astros. So all of these teams are flip-flopped depending on how you look at it. Head-to-head versus not head-to-head. Just weird, man. They're real close. But unfortunately, right now, you're on the outside looking in and you got nobody to blame except yourself.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, what does it mean to be an ace? What does that mean? Unfortunately, it means not giving up 5 runs at home with the season on the line. But that's exactly what we saw last night. Luis Castillo just kept catching way too much of the plate. The result was obviously disastrous. Throwing 8-plus innings of vintage Verlander, and you got a recipe for a big old mess.
We need to win the series. That's just where we're at. We still have a chance to do that. We have to come in tomorrow. Get after it. We have to do a whole lot more offensively, obviously, against their starter, and you know, see where that takes us. Really, a game at a time right now. You can't look any farther ahead. We need to win tomorrow's game. That's just where we're at in our season.
That's exactly where they're at. They are at official must-win territory, and they get a chance. Win today with George Kirby on the mound. Win tomorrow with Bryce Miller, and you may have salvaged things as bad as they feel this morning. How many times has this team taken us from rock bottom and rocketed right back up to the top very quickly? So I haven't given up, but you have put yourself absolutely on the precipice. JP Crawford knows it.
You know what, that's at stake. I mean, in the past, we got to look forward to tomorrow. You know, we got bigger games ahead of us right now. Nothing we do about these games. Terrible losses. You know, all these losses suck right now, but there's nothing we could do about them. And just got to keep our heads up, you know, look at the positive side and, you know, get ready for tomorrow.
I honestly, and I'll just be open with you guys throughout the day, I didn't think that this team would lay down and die like this. I didn't see it happen. Honestly, I did not. We can argue about whether they were built the right way. We can argue about whether they should have done more or spent more or whatever. But I'm still truly shocked that a team which has consistently and constantly battled back from every single time they have seemed to be down and out, I'm shocked that they would lay such an absolute egg in the final stretch of the season, especially after what they did in July and especially August. This has just not been their personality at any point over the last few years. So unfortunately, right now, it may be what they're remembered for. I don't think it has defined them for quite some time. Hopefully, they can change that narrative tonight.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All systems go for many of the injured Seahawks as they will get a boatload of players back in time for the Monday night game in New York. That list starts with Jamal.
Jamal is back.
He's playing this
week. Yeah, boy, he's going to make it through the week, but he's ready to go. And he is so ready. Is as jacked up and excited a player as he is. We just got to keep him calm down. And I've already started talking to him about that so that he doesn't lose his brains because he's so fired up.
That is makes sense. You are going to want to make sure you keep Jamal pretty calm. Charles Cross sounds like he will be able to go. And Pete listed a whole bunch of other guys. Sounds like Kobe Bryant is looking to return. We're waiting to see. Still on Tariq Woolen. But a lot of good news, obviously, across the injury front for the Seahawks, and I can't wait to find out what the defense looks like with Jamal Adams in there. They've shown an ability to stop the run so far, right, that we haven't seen in, quite frankly, years. Can his presence help them with some of their other issues? Can it help them with their pass rush? Can it help them with some of those big takeaways that they haven't really had yet? Hopefully, because that's the type of player that he is supposed to be. And in the meantime, Pete really enjoyed what this team did. Their offensive line, without its most talented player at left tackle, they did the thing that Pete always asked them to do.
We got it done yesterday in a lot of ways. I was really fired up that we ran the ball like that. Love that we were play passing and doing our thing. The finish part of it is such a big deal. You know, at halftime, we challenged them pretty good. You know, that we owed it to ourselves. We owed it to the fans, everybody, we're going to play second half like we're capable of doing it. That's why it was so cool that we did it the week before, and then to recapture it home was it's a big step forward.
Yeah, it's hard not to get too pumped up right now after two straight wins, a chance to take advantage of a Giants team that has not looked sharp to start the season. Seahawks find themselves in a pretty good spot.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Disappointing night of primetime football. The Eagles blew out Tampa as expected. The Bengals showed what it means to have a top-tier defense because the Rams basically couldn't function, especially on third down. They were 1-for-11. Wow, ferocious pass rush. Joe Burrow played. He wasn't particularly effective, but he says he's okay.
That was a great first win of the year. No matter how it looks, we got it done. We got through it. No injuries, so moving on to next week.
All right, no injuries, so certainly he's not hurt any worse. And you know what else I did last night? I watched some of the Kraken. It was great to see live hockey in action, even if it was only preseason. Split squad games with Calgary. It was nice to see newcomer Kyler Yamamoto had a couple goals on the road, as did Ty Cartier. Chris Drieger played well up there. And then in the game here, let's see, Matty Beniers had a goal, and they played well. It was fun. It was fun to watch them and just sort of remember that this is a talented team that has designs on getting even farther than they did last year. So that is everything you need to know. We do a quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. It is, you know, I guess maybe similar to some of the frustration folks had with the Mariners heading into this year. There was no next step really added for them this year. I mean, they got better. I think they added some players that will help incrementally, but it was incremental improvement, right, for the Kraken, rather than adding that big name that was going to take you to the next level. Honestly, I thought that in baseball it would work, and it still may. We'll find out. And, you know, if not, they may need to take a little bit different tack this offseason.
Yeah.
In hockey, I don't know. We'll see. I do tend to think that you've got to have some studs. You've got to have some guys that are capable of changing the game by themselves. Is Matty Beniers enough? My gut tells me no, but we'll see.
Closer we'll to basketball out. In that way.
Closer.
Closer. No, yes, not is.
Closer.
509 said, how can the M's have a miracle comeback and rip the hearts out of Astros if they don't drop a couple games?
That's true.
Just testing the faithful.
Maybe, but you can't afford to drop a couple.
I know.
You could afford to drop that one. That's it.
Yeah.
This is must-win territory, ladies and gentlemen. This is it. This is must-win. There is no more tomorrow, basically, if you don't win tonight.
Yeah.
So
and the fans were ready for it last
night.
Got to
do it tonight, got to do it tomorrow, and then probably got to do it at least once or twice over the weekend. All right, let's take a moment here. Jeff Passan, as I said, is going to join us for some gloating at 7:30. I can't wait for
that. Keep calling it gloating. I don't think he wants to gloat.
I was texting with him last night.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, he's probably
No.
It's just not what anybody's looking for. Pete Carroll, though, he's not gloating. But I will say this, and I'll get into a little bit more detail later. My vibe that I'm getting off of Pete right now is as confident as any I've gotten in the last few years from Pete.
Wow.
Stick around. You'll hear from him next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
We're just getting warmed up. Come on, let's go.
The Pete Carroll Show. The first word from the Seahawks head coach every Monday at 9:30 with Brock and Salk. Presented by the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook and Top Fitness.
Coach.
Hey.
The circle of toughness. You got to complete the circle of toughness.
There you go.
Was it complete yesterday?
We got it done yesterday in a lot of ways. I was really fired up about you look at the whole game as it plotted out. You know, we did some really cool stuff. Loved that we ran the ball like that. Loved that we were play passing and doing our thing. And the finish part of it is such a big deal. You know, at halftime, you know, we challenged them pretty good. You know, we owed it to ourselves. We owed it to the fans, everybody. We're going to play second half like we're capable of doing it. That's why it was so cool that we did it the week before, and then to recapture it at home it's a big step forward. So I'm really fired up about that. We got a lot of areas to keep working on and improving, and we're growing together.
Pete, you've told us before how much you've learned from Bud Grant and others. I got to be honest, I've learned a term from you, and I use it a lot on my broadcasts, and that is feel. You like to say, man, they didn't feel the rush, or they could feel us, or you could feel the line of scrimmage, or you could feel the 12s. And I get in these different environments. I'll be in Nebraska this week feeling 97,000 people. There's just something about it. And yesterday just felt like a Pete Carroll kind of, you could just feel your guys at the line of scrimmage. And tell me what you felt from the 12s.
Oh, man, what a great day. It was such a It was such a demonstration of, you know, what we are and what we've come to love about being here and playing for the fans and the fans following the team and all. It was beautiful. They were so tuned in. Look at the impact they had on the game. You know, there's a portion there they couldn't even get the ball snapped, you know, and it was because of the crowd. And you know, we talked about it some, you know, was it because the crowd was wanting to show the old guys that were here, you know, that they're still here and all that, or was it just the game or what it was? But that's us at our best, and we finished great in that game, and they're all big part of it.
Obviously going to focus a lot on the win and the game yesterday, but just since you mentioned them and seeing the 10th anniversary group out there of the Super Bowl team, what was that like for you? I know you heard you earlier in the week say, yeah, you'll focus on it eventually, but you got to prep for the game first. Once you finally did get to focus on them, what was that experience like?
Well, we had enough opportunities to get around the guys. We had a function on Friday night, then it came to Saturday, and then saw them on the sidelines in pregame. It was so clear, the connection that is so deep and so meaningful and continues to be meaningful in their lives, and the pride that they have taken to being in part of something special like that, it didn't go away. And so we had a great showing. A ton of guys came. Everybody had something to say about it because they could all feel it, and it was just so obvious. And it was really heartwarming in all of that. But it's also powerful message and illustration of what you can do in settings, you know, whether it happens to be football in our game and all that. You know, people can do stuff like that where they just grow so close together that the relationships are meaningful, and it doesn't matter whether you saw somebody yesterday or 2, 5 years ago, 7 years ago. It's the first time you talk to them, you hug them up, and you know you're right back again.
Anybody you hadn't seen in a particularly long time that jumped out, you're like, oh man, it was really good to see them, and it had been too long?
Oh, there was all kinds of guys. Yeah, Sweezy, McQuiston, Phil Bates, you know, guys I hadn't seen or heard of much at all, you know, seen Sweet a little bit, but it was just, you know, BJ, it was just so many cool guys to run into, and everybody had just the biggest, warmest smile and the hugs and all of that.
Who talks the most in that environment? Who's the loudest?
Well, if you give Doug a chance, he'll be. If you give him a chance, you just got to plug him in, and he's going. I love being around Doug, and we had a real special, you know, kind of pregame thing too. And I was challenging him, who's going to compete more on this day, you know, you or me, you know, and that kind of thing. And so it was just awesome, and the fans are all part of that. And if you, like, I think I heard KJ say, didn't he say about the parade and coming back to our fans was the moment that he cherished the most. Me too, you know, and I'm in on that. That never saw a more special moment happened for a bunch of people, and it was really cool.
Pete, in that room next door, after you took Witherspoon with the number 5 pick, you dropped the name Troy Polamalu. And now Polamalu is a safety and Witherspoon's a corner, but you said that just because of the feel and the instincts. When I watch him play, there's a guy from our era, my era, when I was around, that he reminds me of, and that's Dale Carter.
Yeah.
Is that a fit?
Oh, I'm not sure Dale. I don't want to say anything disparaging here, but I don't know that how physical he was. I don't remember that part of it. I know how creative he was and impacting he was. Spoon has a hit in this game. It's as good as a hit as a corner's going to make. And it wasn't like he caught the guy kind of not looking and he went nose to nose. That's just one of the things. But you can see him react, his reactions and his ability to assess the situation and then go for it. Showed up, you know, again, and so that's the special feel that you know, I sensed in him. That's why I said something about Troy way back when, you know, and he's just getting going. He's just figuring it out, and he'll get a lot better.
Is that a processing speed? We talk about quarterbacks needing to process the game. I don't think I've ever heard, you know, and maybe you guys do, I'm sure, evaluating and scouting. But is there a corner that just has a processing speed that's different?
Well, yeah, you're calling it something I haven't called it before, but I identify with the thought. They see things. There's a play. They threw a quick screen on him on Spoon's side, and there's a big blocker coming out to him, and he attacks the blocker and then dips inside and gets in on the hit. That most guys won't do that. You know, you're supposed to contain and keep your leverage and keep your outside arm free in that play, but he didn't do that. He was able to manipulate the blocker to position himself and still contain the play. Lofa Tatupu was one of those guys. He was a great player in the way that he could manage his way to fit into plays and set blockers up to you know, to finesse them into ways that he can make the tackle in amazing fashion. And so, you know, it is, there's a processing that they can see the stuff and then they take advantage of that. They can see it and they trust it, and then they have this magnificent willingness to go for it, you know, and that's what makes him you know, the player that he is.
How have you felt Jaron Reed?
Wow.
In his return.
Wow, what a game he had yesterday.
Was he better yesterday than almost at any point?
It's the best game I've ever seen him play. It was the best game ever. And he, you know, he only practiced on Friday, I think it was, last week. You know, he has a major groin injury. I mean, legit, it's on the MRI, the whole thing. He said, I'm playing. And he just played right through it. I mean, it's not like, you know, oh, yeah, I feel a groin. I mean, it's MRI validated and all that. It's legit. Second degree strain. He just went ahead and played football. Played the best game he's played. Run and pass. And he was a factor in pass rush a number of times. Not just the sack and a half that he had, but and then he penetrated on the running game a couple times, took advantage of the fits and stuff like that. And he's a marvelous, you know, revisit, you know, addition to this team. It's great that he's back.
He had all them old heads there, Salt. Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You see him try to do the dance? He tried to do
Mike Bennett.
Yeah, the Mike Bennett, the Mee Bane thing. He couldn't pull it off. He wasn't even close.
But the
thought was there. It was a nice thought.
Brock, I teased earlier that we would ask Pete about a person that I don't think we've ever asked him about before, but he certainly deserves a lot of credit, so I'll give you the question.
Well, I mean, at one point yesterday, Pete, you had 80% of a new offensive line out there from week one. You had four guys out there. Only Evan was the only one left standing. And yet Andy Dickerson's crew just does not flinch. Can you talk about Coach Dickerson and the influence he's had on that whole room? So no matter who goes down, next man up, and not just next man up, they just play as if there's no difference.
Yeah, I thought it was a great illustration last week and even more so this week. To come back again this week, and remember, Brian Burns is a pretty darn good player out there. We didn't even hardly see him. He already was a factor. And the kid last week, you know, top pick in the draft or something, those guys didn't even factor into the game. And so, but where you're going is a great place because the uniformity of our play, regardless of who's in there, that's pretty freaking special now. Anthony Bradford, you know, we see him as a talent. He's a brute, and you watch the film now. There's four or five plays in there like he's done every time he's been in the game. He mauls guys, and he did it again. And he's barely learning what he's doing. But for those guys to pull that off, you know, we were on the sidelines. We were switch-o change-o for a second or two there, how we were going to put our guys back in the game. Leaving Evan at center is really important. So he is really doing a good job. He kind of keeps it all together. So Andy's got a great connection to Evan, to the field. And he and Khali, you know, they're putting together a fine group, and this is a really good illustration of it again in 2 weeks in a row.
When they run the ball, they get some pretty interesting dudes running the ball behind them. Mm-hmm. Top two running backs, talking about Walker and Charbonnet, what makes each of them successful? Almost a compare and contrast question.
They're way different. They're
right. So what allows different. Each of them to be successful?
Kenny has, let's go back to what Brock was talking about, the feel. He can make things happen with his legs because of the awareness he has and then this marvelous elusiveness that he has. Put his foot in the ground and jump, you know, 3-4 yards to the left or the right. That is really rare. He's a rare athlete in that regard. And he's tough. And he's aggressive. And the creativity just shows up. Zach is a whole different style. Man, he is more of a throwback. He is coming downhill at you. He stomps through the holes in the line of scrimmage. He's looking for spaces, but he's looking for hits too. And the hit he had on the sideline, I don't know how Rapes called that one, but man, that was as good.
Funny you should ask. I'm so glad you led me to this. Okay. It's like we've done this before.
Appreciate it.
Here's
it,
Steve Rabel calling that exact play.
Second down and 7 for Geno and company. The handoff to Charbonnet. He's going to go around the left side. Stiff arms a man, turns, first down. Oh, my goodness! What a blast! One of the defenders stays on the ground. I think it's Deion Jones. Down at the 2-yard line, Charbonnet hit him like a bus and knocked him out of bounds. And he was stepping out as well with Charbonnet. Oh, my gosh. No, he hit the defensive back on the play and just knocked him out of the back of the end zone. Holy catfish. Oh,
he got thrown out of the club.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so they're just different styles, you know. And honestly, I keep going back. I hearken back to the SC days, you know, when we had Lindale and Reggie. Those guys were like that. And they were totally different styles. Mm-hmm. And they had this, the Thunder Lightning thing was out there because it was – that's what these two guys are like. And so it's a blast having – I love having different guys that have unique styles, as we've always talked about. And whoever's hot's going to play, you know. Did you guys see the moment when Kenny gestured to leave Zach in the game so he'd get the chance to get the touchdown? And we threw the ball to freaking Bobo. You know, he didn't get a chance to run it.
Well, we'll get to Bobo eventually.
Yeah, but the point that he recognized that he had earned his way down there and wanted to give him the love. And we were starting to sub, and he wanted Zach to stand. I thought that was a great moment.
It dawns on me. I was looking it up last night that Charbonnet's height, weight, and combine numbers are almost identical to Chris Carson's. Mm-hmm. And they're not exactly, but they are very, very close.
The impact of the way they run is similar.
It seems kind of similar, right?
Different styles still, if you splitting hairs here, but the factor and the style of the run and the impact on the game in the sidelines and our guys, they're looking for it. So anytime this is coming, Zach is going to pass one up. He gets another shot. He's going to light up the sidelines again. It just fits. It fits so well with how we'd like to play the game, and it was great to see that yesterday.
We do these takeaways on Mondays, and Salk and I had the same one about Boye Mafe. He was the best player on the field all preseason. Every game, it felt like Boye Mafe, Boye Mafe, Boye Mafe. The stat sheet yesterday showed what, Salk? One tackle?
One tackle, one sack. That was the day.
One tackle, one sack. It felt like so much more than that. Is there pressures that you look at? Is there a quarterback off the spot?
I think he had five pressures, five or six. Mario Edwards had six, and I think he might have had five or six as well. So he did have impact in the game. You're right, and those pressures are, they don't really fit into the great stats, but they're really impacting. And so Boye is doing great, and we missed him, and love having him back out there, and he's going to be a big positive for us.
More Bobo?
Yeah. Let's hear it.
Oh, I guess we do have the sound of it. I didn't even think of that. Justin, do we have the Bobo touchdown as well? All right, let's hear that.
There you go, Justin.
On second down and goal now from the five. Play fake. Gino's going to throw back in the end zone. Reaching up, making the catch. Is it a touchdown? It is a
They wouldn't tell you.
Touchdown.
I know, right?
Touchdown, Seahawks.
I think.
We're still waiting. Yes. Touchdown, Seahawks. Jake Bobo. A high throw. Line of the end zone. It took the official forever. And he dragged that toenail in from 5 yards, his first career touchdown. Jake Bobo in the back of the end zone. Congratulations. The rookie free agent out of UCLA.
Pete, he's not supposed to be that good. Like, it's not supposed to work out that way for guys who run like he does at that position.
He's an unusual player now. Don't sell him short now. He can do a lot of stuff, and we're really fired up about it. We know. We're not able to see it yet. We haven't seen as much impact as he'll have, but everybody on our team knows. We've just seen him enough, and he's done so well in practice. I think Chip Kelly put out the thought that he's the best practice player he ever saw, and he's shown a lot of a lot of stuff about that. And so, anyway, we know what we got, and we love having him. And it was a great play. It was a beautiful job, a great throw and catch, call, the whole thing. Shane was in on that. It was beautiful.
Pete, tell me which metric you're enjoying the most 3 weeks in. I know it's only three, and it's not how you start, it's how you finish. But
you know what I'm going to say.
Fifth in the league in scoring offense. Let's see. Seventh in the league in rush D, but third in the league, 2.9 yards per rush attempt.
Yeah, this is an early season accomplishment that is going to, I hope, be really meaningful. That's it starts somewhere, and to build a great defense, it's got to start somewhere, and the best place for it to start is inside, in the middle, inside out, and that's where we are right now. And so we're off to a fantastic start. I go back again. I said, I think probably last week too. Remember, preseason was the same, so we are there, and so now we need to keep working at it and keep polishing it up, and that is a factor that we need to stay on top of, and so. But really, okay, so that's my favorite stat so far. But I love all of the stats on there. We have a lot of stats on offense now. Scoring down there, I think we're 100% of the time we're in the red zone, we scored. I know they're not touchdowns, and we're all frustrated by that, good reason. But last year, I think we were 95% of the time we were in the red zone, we scored. And that was like second or third in the league. That, along with the explosions, that's defining how we're building this team together. And those are really good numbers for us. We need to keep going. Jay Mai had a great game yesterday. We hit seven times, you know, out of seven. Coming back from his other little deal, you know, he was on fire. That's a huge factor for us moving forward. Mikey didn't have to punt, you know, two times or something like that. That's great. So those are the kind of the factors in behind maybe the scenes a little bit that we can really build on and count on. And all in all, though, guys, I mean, you didn't ask me yet, but I'm on a roll here. The thing that I'm most fired up about is finishing. And 25 points in the second half for the offense. Awesome. And we didn't help them with any turnovers or anything like that. But 25 points in the second half to finish that thing off and be ahead and out in charge. We were behind at halftime. You know, that's a great asset to us moving forward. And we got to carry it again another week. But that's such a big factor to play all the way through the minutes that they allow you to play. And guys got that in their heart a little bit. Well, Alan,
I want to make sure we get to this. This could take 10 minutes here because I want to run through just a few of the injuries. And the
players aren't coming in today.
The list is so long that I just want to make sure we get through some of this. Are we going to see Jamal this week?
Jamal is back.
He's playing this week.
Yeah, well, he's got to make it through the week. Yeah. But he's ready to go. And he is so ready. He's as jacked up and excited a player as he is. We just got to keep him calm down. And I've already started talking to him about that so that he doesn't lose his brains because he's so fired up to play.
Charles Cross, I heard you say yesterday there's a possibility. Does he still have a job based on how well Forsythe has played?
He's competing. The competition is on. Stone has done everything he could to show him that the Wally Pipp story has got a reason. You know, we know that background there. So we'll see what Charles has a really good chance to come back. Yeah.
Tariq
has a really good chance to be back.
Disley
has a good chance to be back.
Phil Haynes.
Yes, Phil Haynes. Phil practiced on Thursday or Friday, it was, and he was really close then, so he should make it back. Kobe Bryant's saying he's going to make it back. Yeah.
All right. And who am I missing? Trey Brown. How's he doing today?
He had a legit concussion, so he's got to go through the protocol and see if he can make it.
And Daryl Taylor with a shin.
Yeah, that one is just going to be day to day because he got kicked in the shin.
Okay. I think that's it. If I've missed anybody, please let me know.
Good accounting, though. There's a lot of guys.
It's a lot of guys. Yeah. I mean,
Rabel. Is Rabel okay?
Is Rabes okay? You guys don't usually want the week five bye, but in this case, it might be a pretty good thing.
Let's go take care of business and have a great week and get this game, and then that bye would be really well timed for us. Let's not miss this one. Diggs couldn't practice, okay, but he said he was going to play. He said, thought he could do it. He didn't. Played the whole game and came out of it great. Julian Love got a little bit of work on Friday and said, I think I got it, you know, and he was back. Did not practice Wednesday, Thursday. Great job of staying through the game. DK got freaking hammered the week before, stuck it out, practiced on Friday, looked good, made it through the game, apparently. We'll see when we see him tomorrow.
Did you hear his line about that yesterday?
No.
They asked DK about how he was doing, and he's like, I don't know, go ask the other guy. He's the one who's still out.
Perfect. Good for him.
All right.
Yeah, and then there was some. Who else was there?
Well, you mentioned Jaron Reed as well.
Jay Reed said he was going to play the whole time. Got a little bit of work on Friday. Just marvelous illustrations of guys wanting to play and be part of their team.
Last thing, I know we got to run here quickly, but Jamal Adams is going to play for the first time in a while. What does that look like on a football field
in New York?
Yeah, I mean, how do you use him at this point? What will that look like?
Really well, man. We're going
to
use him.
Oh, it's back. We're back to that.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah.
Thanks for leading.
Okay.
We've got a whole plan. We've been working it the whole time, and the process has been underway for how he fits in. Let it be a surprise, okay? So we can see where he's coming from.
All right. Well, I was planning to just tell the Giants about it.
I know. That's exactly where you were going with this.
Hey, P, what do you think about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce?
Oh, man. Well, I happen to really like Taylor Swift. My whole family, all the girls in the family, grandkids and all, and the moms all went and saw her, you know, and so it was a big buildup. They came to town for the event, so I kind of got Swiftied into it a little bit. So I was fired up to see her up in the booth and all that.
You ever have 70 scored on you?
No. No, that was
unique.
Yeah, that was.
You don't see that every day.
Really difficult. Really difficult.
At some point, I will ask
you. Of course, it's a heated press conference. What the frick?
I know you said last week that you've got a whole plan for how you bounce back after losses. Mm-hmm. Bouncing back after giving up 70 would be a huge challenge. Yeah. All right, Monday Night Football next week.
Let's go.
In New York against the Giants. We'll talk to you on Tuesday. Thank you.
A little prime time. We'll be there.
We'll be there for sure. There's Pete Carroll, who joins us, of course, after every Seahawks game. It's going to be Tuesday next week, Monday night game. In fact, after the show yesterday, I spent a moment or two with Pete trying to figure out our timing. We may, Justin, you may be the first to hear about this along with everybody else at the same time. We may, do it live with Pete in the 6 a.m. hour.
Oh, okay.
And then replay it at 9:30.
For people who are used to hearing it at 9:30.
Yeah, so just a little FYI that may go down that way because I think they get off the plane at like 5.
Oh, so it's just like, hey, get here, do it, go take a nap.
Right, so we don't want Pete to have to go home. In fact, he was like, yeah, I'm not coming home and doing that. Like, I'm not coming back in. If I go home, I'm not coming back in.
Are you telling Pete values sleep? Weird.
I mean, he has time for it anyway, which is nice to hear.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure he said at the end there about Taylor Swift that it was a big bill. Maybe he said it was a big deal, but I thought he said it was kind of a big bill.
Could be both.
I mean, it was probably both of those things for Pete if he brought everybody to the show.
You got to imagine when you're Pete, everywhere you go, people just look at you like, well, you're going to cover this, right?
I got a lot of questions from my family last night about Travis Kelce. People who have never asked about Travis Kelce ever. Heather's like, so is he a good player? I'm like, like we watched the Super Bowl. Like, what? Come on. Like, where? Why is there no recognition of this at all? And there was none. She was like, okay, well, like, what's his personality like? I'm like, oh, now I got to explain all this.
I saw some classic car nerds going crazy yesterday because he drove off with Taylor in a convertible 70 Chevelle 396.
Of course he did.
CSS, it's a pretty rare car.
Think he rented that for the
occasion? No, he's a car guy.
Oh, he's a car guy.
Yeah, there's been a story about him having that car built for him. And
I have so many questions about this. We're going to get to them later, probably about 8:45. I've got a lot of questions about what it would be like and sort of how that whole world would operate when all of a sudden you're thrust into the spotlight of dating Taylor Swift.
Yeah, his jersey, like being a president.
His jersey sales went up by 400% yesterday.
And it's not as if they weren't selling before. He's still one of the biggest names in the game.
That was just day one.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Whew. All right. Brock's coming in next. We'll see where... I don't know, man. I don't even want to talk to Brock about the Mariner. Can we just not do it?
He didn't grasshopper us yesterday.
I think we were all just so upset. Yeah. I mean, it just got away from them so fast. Why are we where we are? Brock's in next on Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, salesports.com.